The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Welcome to Mind Pump, the number one fitness, health, and entertainment podcast in the world.
We're number one!
This is a Q&A episode. This is where we answer questions asked by listeners like you. And this is what went down in this episode. Now, we opened it up with the first 45 minutes being our own introductory conversation where we talk about different topics we'd like to talk about, like fitness and health, or we bring up studies, or we talk about current events. So let me give you the breakdown. We started by talking about knee function. Oftentimes, when you have knee pain, it's due to hip dysfunction or ankle and foot discussion. So we went into a deeper discussion about that type of stuff. Then we talked about Jeff Bezos and his eternal clock. I guess he's building a $45 million clock in a mountain somewhere, Justin said.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
It is weird.
Then I talked about my high-protein cookie recipe. It was actually pretty good. It's peanut butter chocolate cookies from Organifi, and I used Organifi plant protein. It's my favorite protein to use. By the way, Organifi is one of our sponsors. Here's how you get the Mind Pump discount. Just go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/Mind Pump. Use the code Mind Pump for 20% off.
Sal, bring in the cookies.
Then I talked about Love and Logic. This is a great course on parenting, and so I gave a little update on how it's working with my kids. We talked about how the retail world is going to be reshaping due to the pandemic. Then we talked about a survey that was done on about 2,000 Americans on how this pandemic is going to affect them on a permanent level. And then we got into the fitness questions.
Ooh, here we go.
The first question was, what are the best exercises for working the obliques? Next question, this person wants to know how to fix duck feet. This is where your feet turn out when you do exercises or when you walk. The third question, this person wants to know why they gained a couple pounds and yet they look leaner. By the way, they're doing MAPS anywhere. So this is what's caused that situation. Now, of course, it's more muscle. They look leaner because muscle is
a little
more
bit
dense
of sorcery
than body fat. By the way, MAPS anywhere still on sale. Just use the code WHITE50. That's the word white and the number 50. And the final question in today's episode, this person wants to know how much NEAT is too much. Now, NEAT stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So is there such a thing as doing too much of that that'll impede on the rest of your goals?
When NEAT affects your meat.
And results. Wow. Also, these are the final hours for the MAPS Prime and MAPS Prime Pro 50% off sale. Now, MAPS Prime teaches you how to set up your own personalized warm-up sessions, or what do we like to call priming sessions. Now, why are those important? How you set your body up for your lifts makes a huge difference on muscle activation, muscle fiber activation, your range of motion. Essentially, it'll make your workout much more effective. Now, MAPS Prime Pro is all about correctional exercise. So if you have pain, aches, or you want to improve overall mobility, MAPS Prime Pro will help you do that. Now, both programs half off. Here's how you get that 50% off discount within the next few hours of this episode dropping. Just go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and use the code PRIME50. That's PRIME50, no space, for the discount. I wanted to address something that, because we've got the free webinar, the mobility webinar now that's been on, and people have gotten a lot of value out of it. And, you know, Prime and Prime Pro have been on sale, so we've had a lot of people get the program. And there's this one question that keeps popping up, so I want to clarify on the podcast. The question is, what do I do for knees? What do I do for painful knees? What do I do when my knees click and, you know, my knees bother me? Because when you go in MAPS Prime Pro, what you'll find is that we address all the major joints of the body except for the knees. In fact, if you go in there, you will not find knee-specific mobility exercises, but there's a very, very important reason for this. And the reason is that if you have knee problems that are not related to a current injury, like in other words, if your knee, if you just hurt your knee mm-hmm. and it's injured, that's different. Just like anything else, right? You don't do mobility work on something that's just injured. But if it's chronic pain and it's been kind of bothering you for a while, your knee pain is either coming from your hips. In other words, your hips have dysfunction. They're not moving properly, working properly. Or it's coming from your feet and ankles. It's not coming from dysfunction in the knee because the knee itself moves.
It's a hinge joint.
It moves, it flexes and extends, and your hips and ankles and feet dictate how well it works.
Well, not only that, it's a floating joint.
Yeah.
It's floating, and it's being held together by all the tendons, all ligaments, and fascia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So because that's what makes it unique. It's that this floating joint that you have all these other things that are wrapped and attached. And those other things, the other fascia, tendons, ligaments, the origins and insertions go up to the hip or the ankle.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what you're addressing is the dysfunction there, and fixing the ankles and the hips will relieve the issues that you're, for the most part, right? There's obviously exceptions to the rule if you have acute injury that you did or whatever, but for chronic pain in the knee, it's almost always, you know, the hip or the ankle or the combination of the two of them that are causing
it. Yes,
that.
And this is from a correctional exercise standpoint. Now remember, the kneecap, like Adam's saying, the kneecap itself floats. Mm-hmm. And when you bend your knee and extend your knee, it travels along like a groove. It's like a track that it travels on. And if that kneecap is being pulled to the right mm-hmm. or to the left, then you're going to have pain. Now, what pulls it to the right or left? Well, that's the alignment that's caused by your feet, your ankles, or your hips. And if that's off, now you've got kneecap pain. What about the knee joint aside from the kneecap? Well, that joint is being held together and kept in place by all these ligaments, and it bends or extends. That's it. Bends and extends, bends and extends. Again, if there's twisting, torsion being placed on that, because your knee joint doesn't twist. It's not like your shoulder where I could twist my shoulder joint, or your hip that it twists, or even your ankle that has a little rotation. Your knee doesn't rotate. It's put in place. There's a little bit of give from the ligaments, mm-hmm. but it's not supposed to have that kind of range of motion. So if it's being twisted by every time you do a lunge or a squat or lots of walking, it's because your hips or your ankles or your feet are causing the ligaments of the knee to try and stabilize, which are not, there's a certain amount of stabilization they should do, but it shouldn't be holding everything together and keeping it in track because your hips, knees, and your hips, ankles, and feet are not working properly.
This took me a really long time to like really grasp and understand that as a trainer. It would probably be at least 5+ years in before I really put this together.
Yes.
I remember as a early young trainer, if a client complained of knee pain, I would just switch the exercise, right? Because I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the tools yet to understand that, oh, okay, the reason why their knee hurts is because they don't have enough knee travel over their ankles because they lack ankle mobility, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. they have extremely tight hips and then it's pulling on there, or the fascia of your IT is really tight and pulling on the knee. Once I understood that and learned how to help correct that, it was a game changer, you know. And that really is the answer if you're a listener or you're a potential trainer that's listening right now. When someone complains of knee pain, is that this is where Prime Pro is such a valuable asset. Is you go in there, and this is how I explained to a lot of people that went to the webinar on how to use this tool is. I put together a little routine and I picked like 5 of my favorite exercises that kind of addressed some of the most common issues I see. But the program has over 55 different movements in there for a reason. And the idea is that you nail down what joint is the biggest offender, meaning it has the least amount of range of motion and it's causing the most issues in your body, and focus on just a couple movements for that joint to really improve its range of motion and drill that home. And there we keep getting asked, you know, how often should I do this? When should I all the time? Yeah. If it's a mobility thing, it's not like strength training. Strength training, there's a protocol of how much you want to do it and how often to make sure you optimize building muscle. When it comes with mobility or working on a range of motion in a joint, you can't do enough of it. Yeah. So you want to be doing it sporadically all the time to improve that. And so that's the answer. And in the program, we teach you kind of how to program it throughout your routine. But really, the answer is you take a couple of these moves that relieve the most pain for you or help you the most with range of motion, and you practice it all the time.
I really liked the visual, Sal, at one point you had the analogy that of like a sliding glass door, yep. and like how that would go on its track. And so, there's two points to that, with the front of the door, the back of the door. And so looking at that is the ankle and the hip is to guiding, that sliding glass door, just a little bit of degree off is going to create a lot of friction, which is then is going to become a problem. And the more it gets off track, that's where we're really going to have the injuries and the things result from that.
Exactly. If you're pushing the sliding glass door and you're pushing it, in one direction as you're sliding it, or pulling it in another direction as you're sliding it, eventually that track gets worn down and starts to have problems. Now you could go in and fix the track. You could have an osteopath go in your knee, scope it, scrape off the parts that, maybe there's some chondromalacia underneath the kneecap or whatever, and work on it. And, knee feels a little better. But if you don't fix the fact that it's getting pulled in one direction or the other from the hips, mm-hmm. ankles, and feet, the pain will continue to reoccur. Even foam rolling, which temporarily will alleviate, for a lot of people, by the way, foam rolling will temporarily alleviate a lot of your pain. It's a temporary fix. It doesn't fix the root cause. Only working on the strength and mobility and connection to the hips, ankles, and feet will do that. By the way, this is true for the elbow too. That's another joint you're not going to see addressed in MAPS Prime Pro. The elbow, very similar. If you have elbow pain, now if there's tendonitis that needs to heal, allow it to heal. But 9 out of 10 times, if there's a problem and pain in your elbows, it's coming from either your wrists, your hands, which is most common, or your shoulders. Oftentimes, it's actually the wrists and hands. In fact, a lot of the times when people's elbows hurt, it's coming from the forearm flexors and extenders that attach near the elbow. In fact, you could test this yourself. If you have elbow pain, extend your arm, press on the top and the bottom of the elbow where the forearm muscles attach. And if that's sore, mm-hmm. that's a nice little clue. And you can say, wait a minute, this is due to my wrists and my elbow and my hands. And this is why I'm starting to, and they call it, what do they call that? Tennis elbow.
Tennis elbow. Golfer's elbow too.
Oh yeah, totally. So that's how mobility kind of works, is you want to look and find the root cause. By the way, this is common for a lot of joints. Oftentimes, if you have pain, even in the hips, sometimes it's coming from the feet and the ankles. Sometimes you have pain in the feet, and that may be coming from the hips. So this is why you want to go, if you have a program like MAPS Prime Pro, what we did is we put a test under each of these major joints. Pass that test, so follow the test, and then that'll help you identify, I lack mobility here. Maybe that's why I have pain in this other part of my body. It makes a big difference.
Dude, did you guys see? I was just reading, I think it was Popular Mechanics or one of those scientific type of magazines, and I saw this article about Jeff Bezos and what he's building for this clock that's supposed to survive 10,000 years.
Huh? Was it an atomic clock or whatever?
Yeah, it's like a 500-foot clock that he built inside a mountain, basically, and it's powered by all these mechanical gears and everything, but I guess it only ticks every so often. I don't remember all the details, but it's supposed to survive for 10,000 years. It's crazy.
Wow.
What is the point of that, though?
Well, that you want people to, in 10,000 years, to be like, wow, who did this? You'd be like,
yeah, you want to kind of, you want to show that there's going to be a future beyond this, and that get people to think that there's a lot more, coming up.
You guys seen those clocks that they use either, I don't know what they use. I think they use atomic functions, but they're so accurate, these clocks, that they won't be off even by a millionth of a second.
Yeah.
It'll take them a billion years or something insane like that. That's how accurate they are.
Yeah. So, okay. So basically, it's powered by day night thermal cycles and synchronized at solar noon. So, I don't know. It's just crazy. This was thought of by this scientist, Danny Hillis, and I guess he came up with this in 1986 as sort of a timepiece that every humanity could share,
dude,
for 10,000 years.
This is when you have hella money, yeah.
42 million, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, 42 you have so much money that you're like, eh, I feel like. And then on top of it, you're like, how will people remember me in 10,000?
Well, this is like pyramids, right? Like, that's what they did. It's like, oh, I have so much money. Look at what I can do.
We're teasing them a little bit about that. But, you know, the truth is $42 million is like you and I going running out spending 100 bucks.
I know.
That's a drop in the bucket.
Right. And how cool would that be to spend 100 bucks and build something that will be talked about probably 10,000 years from now? I mean, if I had that kind of money, I would do shit like that.
You want to hear something crazy? So his wife, they got divorced, right? So she got half.
Yeah.
I think it was half of his money.
Yeah.
Instantly became, I think, the fourth or third richest woman in the world.
Dude, she married well.
She was like leapfrogged Oprah just by divorcing.
Just divorced. You know, the one of the wealthiest women in the world. I mean, all joking aside, she was with him before all this happened. I'm sure she helped
support. And so it's well-deserved.
Right? Yeah, helped support and all that stuff. But I thought that was funny. You know, you get divorced and, you know, now you're in Forbes top, you know, top richest people in the world.
That'd be interesting to see if, like, more billionaires started to do these kinds of things where they're, like, investing in, you know, some kind of megalithic structure to, like, remember them by or something.
Well, are you guys from, I think it was in 1972, I want to say, where we shot a satellite like a space explorer up into space, and on it we had a gold record.
Gold disc.
That played all of, like, every language, and it says something
babies
like
crying.
I thought we put that on the moon. Did we put that on the moon?
No.
We just shot it out into space.
Oh,
and then on it is like a picture of human anatomy. So you can see, like, here's a male, here's a female, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then we put mathematics. This is my favorite part, right?
Here's my dick.
No, this that's not my favorite part.
Aliens.
Hella big.
Yeah. Do they give him a big one? The Statue of David kind of thing.
No, here's the part that I love the most. Then they put, like, these mathematical calculations on it, because they figured that math is a universal language. Like, any species that's advanced enough to find this will understand math. They might not know what English is or Spanish, but they'll know math. So they literally gave them the coordinates to find Earth. I thought that was very irresponsible.
Yeah, why?
What the fuck are you doing,
man? How do we know if they have our best interests in mind?
Yeah. We get invaded by aliens. Yeah, like, how did you guys find us?
Yeah, we were trying to find somewhere to habitat. Oh, look at this. Look at these idiots.
Somewhere these water bears gained intelligence, and now they're coming for us.
That's why I think they should shoot out. What they should have done is shot out a satellite and made it look hella scary. Like, here's humans, and we got claws and, like you said, big old dick and whatever.
Right.
Yeah, come find us. We dare you to come find us.
Oh, man.
Anyway, it's pretty.
We have ideas.
Pretty funny stuff. So I see you guys destroyed the treats that I made.
Yeah,
you were downplaying it, dude. I actually really enjoyed those.
I know.
Cookies.
I know. He came in there like, they're all right. They were phenomenal. Tell the truth here, though. Are you the baker or did Jessica bake
it? I made it.
You did.
No, I swear to God.
Didn't. No kidding.
I did. So I made it. So I went on the Organifi website because we were going to make cookies and, you know, have fun or whatever. And I thought, you know what? Adam's always talking about how he makes high protein baked snacks, or at least Katrina does, right?
Yeah.
So I thought this might be.
I find them. That's what
you
I
find them and you give them to her. Okay. Whatever. You're always talking about it. So, and I've never done that.
Here's the recipe.
I've never baked anything. So it's really one of my first times doing it at all. But I said, I want to make it like a high protein, you know, dish or whatever. So I looked on their website. I Googled Organifi peanut butter and chocolate chip protein cookies, and they're good.
They were good.
They're not bad. And if you eat the whole batch, it's like 60 grams of protein or something like that. Like, because it's got peanut butter in it, which has got the protein. And then, of course, the
protein,
the plant protein powder that you put in. So it's, I'll give the.
You use vanilla, I imagine.
I did, but if you use chocolate, it's probably better.
Oh, you think so?
I do.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
I think vanilla works the best when you're baking.
It blended well that way.
Yeah, so just coming from somebody who's done this a lot, personally, I actually think, even though you think chocolate would be. Vanilla is like one of the best flavors to bake with.
Really?
So
that's what I did. I did vanilla.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's how you make it. You get 1 cup of rolled oats, 2 scoops of what I used was the Organifi Complete Protein Powder, 1/2 cup of chocolate chips. I actually use chocolate chunks. I like those better. 1/2 cup of ground flaxseed meal, 1/2 cup of peanut butter, 1 egg, 1/3 cup of honey or maple syrup. I use maple syrup. 1 teaspoon of pure vanilla extract and 2 tablespoons of coconut oil. Now check this out, right? You mix it all in the bowl. Then you make them into the balls and you kind of press them down a little bit. 350 degrees, you bake them for 5 minutes.
That's it.
Five to 7 minutes max. You don't want to overdo it. They cook really fast. Yeah. But they're really good.
No, they were
and
really
I dipped
good.
Them in almond milk or whatever. Oh. So I had my high
look
protein.
Look at you, little baker guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Should get you an apron, dude.
Yeah, my cookies yes. brought the boys to the yard, apparently.
It certainly did.
I did a good job downplaying it, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
See, you know what my problem is? I usually oversell shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I come in, these are awesome.
We expect it. You
did
know,
the so. Takeaway clothes
this
with the dessert.
Time, I'm going
to
yeah. tell them.
That's probably guys. Why you got us to be interested. Yeah. You know, we're like, yeah. what? No, yeah. let me see.
Yeah. Speaking of which, dude, Justin, have you looked into that Love and Logic course for kids yet?
Oh,
for raising kids?
Just overviewed it just briefly.
Dude, I watched the only like the first three modules or whatever so uh-huh. far. And so I'm already applying.
Oh, you are.
Dude,
yeah, did you talk about this yet on the show?
I don't know if I talked about using it yet on the show. I talked about it. It worked.
Wow.
It like really worked.
Well, like Mind Ninja style? Or
actually,
what?
It's stupid that I never even thought of this. So this is a communication technique that you learn in sales. It's called the alternate advance.
Right.
And what it is rather than giving, you give people options, and both options you're happy with. So rather than, this is a simple one, right? Rather than saying, would you like to buy my product? Which the answers are what? Yes yeah. or no.
Right.
No is not an answer
would
that
you
we want.
But rather buy this one or that one.
That's right. it, right? Yeah. So it's kind of like that. And so what you do, because what they talk about in this course is that if you have a power struggle with children, either you win and they're resentful, or they learn how to take orders, in which case they just become order takers and they go off to college and then, you know, their leader of their frat house tells them to do something, they do it. Or they rebel. Those are like the three main options that end up happening. So they say what you want to do is you want to give your kids the feeling of having power and control over their lives. That way you have, when you do ask for things to be done, they're more likely to listen. And when they do make choices, they feel like this is their decision,
right.
and they're not going to feel as rebellious or resentful or whatever.
Way more powerful that way.
Right. So give you an example, right? So like my daughter's watching TV and I want her to turn it off. And do the dishes. So I'll say, hey, usually what I would do is like, hey, turn the TV off and do the dishes, right? Mm-hmm. That would always result in, you know, a little back and forth. Instead, what I'll say is, hey, do you want to stop watching this now and do the dishes, or do you want to watch another 15 minutes and then do the dishes? And bro, it's seriously, no joke, Jessica yeah. and I are sitting there and we did this the whole day, right? We're doing this the whole day and we're looking at each other and like,
you're just giving them options.
We're like, this is weird. Yeah. Because it's weird because my kids are literally like, I'll wait 15 minutes. Or would you like to brush your teeth now? Or do you want to do it 5 minutes before bed? I'll wait five. And they just do it.
Yeah.
You say nothing else. It's the coolest thing ever.
This
I'm waiting for it to not work.
Right.
Is what I'm waiting.
Right.
So far, so good.
I've had moments where I've done that, but I haven't realized that. I'm going to have to really focus on that and experiment because that does make a lot of sense.
It makes a huge difference. It's
well,
crazy.
You're giving them choice. Yeah, even if options. Both choices are what you want, you're still yeah. giving them choice, which pulls the authoritarian side out, right? And now yeah. it's more like, together we're figuring this out, right?
Yes, and then when you have to be yeah. authoritarian, you say something like, look, don't I always give you lots of choices?
Yeah.
This one time I'm telling you this is what you need to do. And they say that works. And then the other one was... I'm trying to remember how this one worked. The other one was they say they really emphasize on not showing that you're angry, mm-hmm. that you're, you know, pissed off or whatever. So because that just causes resentment. You always want them to feel like you're on their side.
Right.
So if you say something like, I made popcorn for my daughter, right? This is just a simple example. And I made her a little bit. It's right before bed. I'm not going to make her a huge bowl of popcorn. It's not good for her or whatever. So I made her a little bit. So she eats it and she goes, oh. She goes, you didn't make me that much. Can you just make me more? And so I laugh and I hug her and I said, nice try, turkey. And then she laughs and it's done.
Yeah.
Turkey.
I mean, all I did was say, nice try. And I gave her a hug.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. And it was over.
I'm messing with you.
Versus telling her, no, the reason why you don't do this.
Yeah, it's not good for lecture. They're against lectures. Yeah. Like if you tell your kid, well, rather than telling them to put your jacket on because it's cold, you say to them, would you rather hold your jacket or would you like me to hold your jacket? And if they still say, I don't want a jacket, whatever, you say, no problem. Then when you go outside and they're cold and they say to you, oh my God, it's so cold, Dad. Then you give them a hug. You're like, I'm sorry, honey. I know it's cold. Don't lecture them.
Yeah.
Let them learn
it's
that shit
on their own. It's funny because it kind of goes against some of my programming of, you know, going through with my parents and like have been really stern about like, this is the way. And then like I would get into some battles with Courtney about this because like, especially when it came to choosing food and choosing dinners and all this stuff, because then it becomes, you can become a short order cook. right? Everybody has different ideas, yes. And they went, well, I want this one, and I want this one. And I'm like, you can't give them these options. You know, this is what it is, yeah. You know? And I'm like hammering that. Yeah. And but then, you know, she's done a good job of convincing me too that like, okay, well, what we'll do is we're going to mark on the calendar and set up our week. And we all get to kind of vote which, you know, dinner we get to kind of place on that day. And that's helped a lot. So it's a little bit similar to that.
It is. And it, like I said, I mean, I grew up the same way you did, Justin. If my dad said something, that's it. You had no choice. You got to do it. Very authoritative type stuff. That's how I was raised. And so that's what I want to do. And the way I would do it normally is tell you to do this. If you say no, then I'm going to, you know, give you a consequence. But this so far is crushing. It's really weird. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. I'm not going to lie.
keep it going. Keep me updated.
Yeah, very strange. Anyway, I read a very interesting article on retail right now and how that's reshaping due to COVID. Mm-hmm. Are you guys reading any of these articles about how companies are...
100%. You know, it's interesting to me right now and why I have this like uncertainty of like what will happen to the economy is... There is definitely a clear divide in, you know, there is some companies that are dramatically struggling to the point some are shutting down and failing. And I know that's what a lot of the news reports. But there's the other side of companies that are actually flourishing during this time. So it's really interesting to read, you know, about all the different ones that are having success and then why ones are failing. And then how is this going to reshape the way we do business in the next 6 months to a year?
That's what I think. Right. I think what we're going to see is there's going to be some changes that are going to be temporary, and then I think there might be some permanent changes in people's behavior. So here's some figures from the retail industry. As I read these, I was pretty blown away. 8.7% drop in retail sales. It's the largest ever recorded. Now, that makes sense, considering they're all forced to be closed, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a big hit. Here's the next number. $1 billion. That's how much cash that Gap has burned since February. $1 billion. Whoa. Just trying to maintain their stores and because they're closed. And they're saying right now that they are going to have to furlough people and stop paying rent pretty soon because they're literally running out of all of their saved cash.
Are they moving completely into the direct to consumer market?
Well, they already have that, don't they?
They do. Okay. So here's what a lot of analysts. So analysts at UBS are predicting that 100,000 retail stores will be closed by 2025 permanently.
100,000?
100,000.
That's a lot of storefronts.
Locations. Wow. And they say that e-commerce will pick it up and, you know, stuff like that. That's going to be coming. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
You know?
It's going to be like a ghost town. You know how in the gold rush, like you'd have these towns kind of pop up and then you have all these buildings and everything. And then you go back, nobody even lives there anymore. Yeah.
But even with something like this, I think just more people were going to go e-commerce. That's got to affect commercial property sales, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Don't you think that'll just make them plummet?
Well, I wonder how they're going to be repurposed, you know? Like, what kind of businesses will fill those spots?
Well, we talked about this before, and I think this is a safe bet. I think companies will still have brick-and-mortar places where you could touch things and try them on, but then you buy them online.
Like, just a display.
Well, yes. Look, I love talking about our partners who that we vetted and took our time, and here's another win, like when you look at Vuori. Mm-hmm. Look how their model is built. They were built as direct to consumer first. And then when they open up shops, okay, so they've slowly started to build brick and mortars, but the way they build them, very tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally like a showcase. And that's how they set it up. It's more of a showcase, allow you to come in, try on fit. So you go, oh, these shorts fit like this. I'm this size. Oh, but then after you've done that, after you've probably visited this store once or twice, you probably don't ever go back anymore. Mm-hmm. Because that's the hardest part about clothes, right? You have to understand that.
You want to know how they fit.
Right. The hardest part about selling clothes completely online and not having a store is until you get an opportunity to try these clothes on, it's really tough to, and Vuori is a good example because Vuori does fit me different than a lot of other clothes. Like I have to do a size up on my shorts and my pants, but my shirts are the same size.
Exactly. Do you remember that company, Adam, that we were looking at that was trying to address this virtually? Yeah. Like it was like for Nordstrom, I think. But yeah, they would have you stand in front of a mirror and then basically they would, it would dress you.
Like superimpose.
Superimpose it on top of you and you would kind of turn around and see how it fit and looked. But I wonder about that, if that still exists or they're trying to move with that.
So I think that was like a failed idea. Like they tried to do it and it didn't pan out the way they were supposed to. I think it was a lot of tech, a lot of money. It wasn't quite the same. Who I think is going to replace, or you're going to see a surge. And so the fact that we get off this would be a good idea for us to look up and see who's publicly traded. That's a company like this are the the trunk companies.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
the companies that send trunks to you, you're on a monthly membership with them, and you try it all on, and then you just send back what you don't want. That model, I think, is brilliant right now for this because...
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, the 3D one, I mean, you got to have this big, massive thing. You still have to go
still
in.
Not the same as
trying
to
go try it.
Yes, and it's still not the same with the feel of putting the clothes on and seeing yourself in the mirror. Sure, what it did do that I thought was interesting was it gave a 3D image of your body, and it said, you know, Adam, these styles of jeans will fit you best based off of your hip to ankle ratio, whatever. And so that made sense and sent me in a good direction to go look, but I still wanted to put them on and try
it's
them
still
on.
Still an emotional thing.
Right. Yes, so I think the companies that will do really well right now with a lot of these retail places starting to close down are the ones that already have a really good model in place for shipping. And there's a lot now. It's become a competitive space.
Well, so here's the one knock I have against it, because I've bought clothes online. I love doing it. But the knock is when you return them, they try to make it as easy as possible, but I don't think it's easy enough. If they make it so easy, first off, that you order the clothes and you get them either that day or the day after, which is becoming very possible now with a lot of these companies, is if you don't like it, you gotta print off the thing, then you gotta bring it somewhere that will take it back or whatever. They need to make it so easy that I try it, I don't like it, I leave it outside and it's gone.
Well, the trunk ones are pretty close to that.
They do, but it's subscription.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't want anything right now and it comes in, you just send it right back.
Every time.
Yeah, every time.
So you can send the whole thing back and never pay a dollar.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
yeah. And what you keep, you end up buying.
I thought you always paid.
You only,
Courtney does this. She has it all set up.
Yeah, you only pay what you keep. It's brilliant.
This is nice.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Because then you have fun trying on clothes.
Absolutely. It's a very smart model, because even if you weren't shopping for something, you get this nice little trunk or crate that comes in, and then you try it on. You're like, oh, shit, I like these. I'm going to keep these.
And they have like a personal sort of tailor. I don't know what you call them, but somebody like a stylist that kind of like
puts it all together.
And then you have this conversation with them. Oh, this didn't work so well. And like, so she has that. I like it in this color more, and sends it back. So,
oh, well, see, this may be the one push that it needed to grow. You know what I mean?
Because I think so.
If you're so used to going to the store and then they're convincing you to do it this way, and it's such a different way of shopping, like me, I'm reluctant, but now I may be more open to doing that.
Well, especially like Justin saying, if they actually start to, because that's nice. If you've ever had a personal shopper help you, which I have. It's nice.
Yes.
Even if you're somebody who's into fashion and you think you can put outfits together pretty well, it's a professional. You know what I'm saying? It's no, even if you're just like us, we talk about personal training. I mean, just because you know weights and you understand it doesn't mean hiring a professional to take you to another level. It's the same thing with someone with fashion. Like, you have somebody put outfits together who's supposed to be good at that shit. I mean,
I may want to try this. Yeah. Well, so I think a lot of our buying behaviors are going to be changed permanently. I don't think everything's going to be changed permanently, but I do think that this situation is going to push kind of what was falling. I mean, retail stores were already starting to lose ground against, you know, e-commerce. Lots of businesses were doing that. Education.
Yeah.
People were already saying, hey, this is way too expensive for what I'm getting. I think that this situation is pushing kind of what was falling and making it happen a little faster. And there was a huge survey that was just done with tons of consumers, and this paints a very, very interesting picture.
Was this you who shared one? I think it was Doug who shared that. Did you share the bubble,
education
bubble? Who shared that?
Oh, right.
I think I did. I did. And basically what it's talking about is now that people and kids and students are getting a taste of going to school online, and if it continues to extend, I think a lot of kids and parents are going to say, hey, why am I spending $20,000-$30,000 in tuition when it's all online and there's all these online competitors? I think that more educators are going to start to move in that direction, is what I think.
Did the article say? What did the article allude?
The article did talk about that.
Okay.
Because you got to, again, the cost of college
now. It's so inflated.
It's inflated partially, mainly because there's easy money to get to go to college because we've deemed it to be necessary.
Yeah.
And so they're all fighting for this money, and you're paying so much money to go to college that, I mean, this is a true fact now.
A loan you absolutely have to pay off.
Yeah, and medical profession is an example of a profession that you have to go to college, right? I mean, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you can go to college, or you don't have to go to college, and, you know, you can do great both ways. You want to be a doctor, you can't practice without going to formal education.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of kids are not going to school to become general practitioners because the pay of general practitioner doesn't justify the cost of going to college. You graduate with a $200,000-$250,000 college debt, and now you graduate and you're making what, $120,000-$130,000 for the first few years or 5 years of work. And so what they're doing is they're saying, you know what, I'm not going to be a GP. I'm going to be this other doctor who's going to make more money. So they're starting to see drops in enrollment because of that.
I'm so surprised that we haven't seen the Googles, Facebooks, Amazon, company Apple start creating their own almost like tech schools, you know, where instead of having you go to get a degree and whatever and looking for PhDs and trying to hire them on, starting your own institute that is just 100% Apple, like everything you need to know about Apple, and then the levels of the degrees and certifications based off of how long you're in it, and then it costs a certain amount of money, and then in addition to that, it almost guarantees you a job or a position. Like
you just absorb like MIT professors, teach everybody.
I just don't see why. I wonder if that's on the horizon for them.
And I think so. I think the situation that we're in right now is going to move in that. It's going to push in that direction. Look, they just did this huge survey, which is very telling. You guys got to hear some of the results of the survey of people. This survey, they surveyed 2,000 U.S. adults between April 3rd and April 6th. So right in the middle of this whole pandemic and what's going on or whatever, they found that 69% of Americans who were polled are extremely worried about traveling on airlines. 62% are extremely worried about visiting restaurants. They found that 76% of these adults admitted that they were extremely worried about taking a cruise liner again, and 43% of them said that this fear will last forever. 72% of respondents said that if they have to do another 30 days of lockdown, that it would force them to a mental or emotional breaking point.
Wow.
And yes, and 100% said that they'll have some type of mental or emotional breakdown if they ran more than 6 months of this stay-at-home orders. And there's more and more in this. They surveyed them about their purchasing habits and what they would do. Yeah, and many of them said they'll be changed permanently.
I know Disney's been affected quite a bit with their theme parks. I was thinking about theme parks, about that. Like if that's already being thought of in terms of like how they're going to be able to shuttle people and not have them so close together, and how that's all going to change in that landscape.
Here's the thing about Disney. Disney's got some of the most powerful lobbies in Washington. So I would assume that they are spending lots of money trying to prevent regulators from saying, Disney, you can reopen, but you got to have 6 feet away from, apart from people. Yeah, I mean, we're going to pay $5,000 for a ticket.
Well, not only that, you can't, every ride is you're right next to a person.
Yeah, like, exactly. You're standing in, their thing was like you stand in line and they try to make an experience out of that, right? Distract you while you're waiting forever.
I hadn't even thought about theme parks like Disney and American stuff like that. Like, when you're on a ride too, you're yelling with your mouth wide open, fucking saliva flying.
Some kid vomits.
Yeah, that ain't going to. Bro, I didn't even think about that. Like, that ain't gonna fly, dude.
No more vomit comets.
Yeah, I imagine.
Your kid's licking the freaking railing and next to the ride.
What are you doing?
I think it's almost guaranteed they're gonna. I mean, they will mask, and maybe even glove. That'd be so weird, though. Imagine going on rides.
They're 100% gonna check your temperature. They're gonna do all the scanning, and like they're gonna be sophisticated in the way they test people.
Dude, this is why I think it's crazy. And we did that episode right on the fitness industry, and it's going viral. A lot of people talking about it. And it's funny to me that there's actually people that actually still believe like, oh, everything will be normal and it opens back up. I'm like, okay, you represent a very small percentage of people that think that way, if you do, because if things are forever
it's
forever going to change. Yes. And at the bare minimum, it's going to change dramatically until we have a vaccine.
Yes.
Yeah. So at least until we have a vaccine, it's going to dramatically change.
At the very least, large social gatherings like concerts or sporting events or Disneyland, at the very least, they're going to be massively changed until there's a vaccine or mass immunity, until we get herd immunity.
Yeah.
But for sure, look, September 11th is another recent scary, situation that happened. Were there permanent changes that happened from September 11th? Yes.
Yeah.
Now, some of them were fear-based at first, and then we kind of went back to normal for a lot of stuff. But there are permanent changes. Going through an airport today has been permanently changed since September. Yeah, I'll give you a stupid example. This is a silly one. You never had to take your shoes off when you went through the airport. That was directly related.
One guy fucked it up for everybody.
That was directly related to September 11th. They didn't have the kind of checks that they have now, and checking people and air marshals on every plane. And then, we pass laws that say that they could read your emails and go through your shit without any judge trial or jury. That was all permanent after September 11th.
And you're talking about something that just affected one space.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
This is something that is affecting all spaces across the board, and some more than others.
Right.
That's why it's going to be really, really interesting to see I didn't even think about theme parks.
Now,
theme parks are going to be crazy.
I think that at some point they're going to be reopened. At some point we'll have these mass social gatherings. And the main reason why I think that is because part of our nature as humans, what makes us human, is we're so social. We're the most
social. Oh, yeah. We want to connect.
We have to. It's part of who we are. And at some point we're not going to care. We're just going to be like, fuck it. I just want – but
wear those full body condoms.
Yeah, but there's going to be some permanent changes. I don't know how small they'll be, but I'm sure there are going to be some permanent lingering changes that'll last forever. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
I was at my parents and we were going through some of my old stuff. My mom kept like everything, dude. It's crazy. And she brought out some of those old starter jackets. You remember those starter jackets? Like I had
the parkas.
Yeah. My brother had the Lakers. I was always rocking the Bulls the starter jacket. My kids really wanted it. And like, I had like two versions of it. And so they both started wearing it and I thought it was funny. And I was like, dude, you don't even know Michael Jordan yet. You know, they didn't even watch any of that. And that documentary just came out. I don't know if you checked it out yet, Adam.
No, I've been watching it.
It seemed like 10 times.
No, The Last Dance.
It brings you right back.
Oh, man. The Last Dance. It's actually, do you know that it's breaking records right now?
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
ESPN. It's on ESPN. It's broken all sports viewed records right now. Now, of course, it's COVID-19, so there's not sports going on. But of all the things that they're playing, nothing is drawing more attention.
They had to move it up too, right?
They did, and I think it was a very smart move right now, right? There's no sports going on. It was supposed to, I think it was supposed to play in another month or two, and so they pushed it up. And they're actually what they're doing, and I don't know if they had planned to do this originally, but every weekend they drop two episodes back to back hour. Mm-hmm. So instead of like dripping you one a week like normally you would, there's back to back, which I love that. So I get to watch like 2 hours of it back to back.
Is it all about him?
It's all about the Bulls.
The team.
Yeah, the team during that year. Now, of course, it's centered around Jordan, but it literally goes through each player, kind of tells their story. And it's
footage that they never released to, which is really cool. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's the sixth dynasty, you know, like season, where they're going for the championship again. It goes through all this stuff and you see, you know, all the characters like Rodman and, you know, you get right back into it. Mm-hmm. Scottie Pippen, man, I love it.
I'm also finishing up a book called Great Teams, which they use sports teams and draw analogies with them with like some of your great businesses. And that it's funny that this documentary is going on right now, and they reference that dynasty in sports so many times in there about like just leadership. And one of the things that
and role players.
Yeah, I brought something up off
I role
air.
Play sometimes.
I brought something up off air with you guys that it was just on my mind recently because I just was reading this part of the book. It just sometimes people avoid like having the like loud personality or the person that doesn't click with the rest of the group. And they actually talk about how healthy that can be to have kind of an outlier or somebody who's like that. The challenge is though, is learning how to integrate them into a cohesive team when they are not cohesive and they're not like everybody else. And they use Dennis Rodman.
I was just going to ask if it was Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman is the example that they use.
He's the ultimate team player.
Yeah, and it's really cool in the documentary. They talk about, he managed him. I'll use one example without spoiling the whole show that I thought was so unique and I didn't know that. I've actually read Rodman's book. I've read Phil Jackson's book and I didn't know this part. They used to let Rodman comes over. He was first with the Detroit Pistons. So a little backstory. So the non-sports fans like Sal can get an idea what's going on here. Detroit Pistons were like the bad,
stay with us.
Were the bad boys, right? And Dennis Rodman was drafted by them and they were known for throwing elbows, starting fights and being the bad boys of the league.
Was Charles Barkley on that team?
No, he was not.
Okay. So I just had to throw a name in there. So people know. No, I know names.
So Dennis Rodman is this like wild child. He goes to San Antonio. He's dyeing his hair. He's rebelling. He dates Madonna, goes completely goes off the deep end that way of like expressing himself.
Cross-dresser before it was cool.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. All that stuff. And the Bulls decide to take him to bring him on, and there's this like, oh my god, are we really going to bring this disaster? And he Jerry Krause, who was the GM of the Bulls, knows this, brings him over, but he knows that Phil Jackson has the ability to manage and lead him. One of the things that he allows him to do Rodman comes after like this. They're on this streak when Scottie Pippen was out and injured, and he is like busting his ass. He's setting all kinds of records with rebounds and killing it, and just he's known as a workhorse, mm-hmm. right? And he comes to Phil Jackson. He's like, I need a vacation, and he tell in the middle of the season. And middle of the season, he tells Phil Jackson that and then tells Michael Jordan that. And Jordan's like, what the fuck? Vacation? I need a vacation. What do you need vacation? And Phil Jackson actually goes, okay, all right, Rodman, 48 hours. He's like, yeah, I need to go somewhere. I'm going to go to Vegas. And so they talk about in the documentary, Jordan's like rolling his eyes. Like, I can't believe like in the middle of the season, we're giving this kid the right to go and go on vacation. And sure as shit, he goes for 48 hours. He doesn't return for like a week, dude.
Oh.
Yeah. But the way they handle him, because he comes back, and when he comes back, he's like leading everybody in practice, out hustling everybody, busting ass. Mm. And so like kind of the moral of the story is that, you know, when it comes to work and it comes to like playing as a team and being there for your guy, like they allow him that latitude. And I think about that in our own team. Like we have people on our team that are different personalities, and yet we are so cohesive the way we run, and we don't shy away from having internal conflict and struggle. We just manage through it and allow everyone to be their individual selves. I think that's a lot of the success.
Yeah, Now I read that Rodman had sex with Carmen Electra on the practice, the basketball floor. What is that called? The court.
I wouldn't doubt that.
I read that was the thing that they had.
Oh, so Carmen Electra was his girlfriend and was the girl who he hooked up with in Vegas when Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan got on a plane to go get him from Vegas. They walked in, they bang on the door, she freaks out, covers herself in the sheets so they can't see her, and they pull him out. And Jordan says that he won't disclose what else was going on in the to sell him out.
Well, Rodman's buddy in North Korea, did you guys hear? I think he might be dead.
Hmm?
Kim Jong Ju.
I heard he was sick, but yeah, I didn't.
Kim Jong Un.
Kim Jong Un.
I don't know the story.
I guess they were operating on him, and because the North Korean surgeon, this is the story, is not used to working on obese patients because, you know, he's the only obese person in all of North Korea because everyone else is starving.
Right.
Apparently, he was in a vegetative state, and the rumors are that he died, and now his sister's going to take over.
No.
And the internet's going ape shit because his sister is pretty. So now everybody's going nuts over his sister potentially.
I did not hear any of this.
Yeah, so this is the rumor, but apparently he was in a vegetative state or dead, or he's dead. And now Dennis Rodman,
well, that's huge news,
was invited to North Korea by him because this Kim, the leader, was a huge fan of basketball in the NBA. And he went there. When he came back, he was like talking about how great of a guy. I think he just, you know, he kind of pumped his brakes or whatever, or pumped his tires a little bit.
I did not know that. I didn't even hear that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's crazy.
So he might be dead.
You right sure now? He's not just setting the table for like a resurrection and make him even more? Because isn't he the one that claims he doesn't shit too?
Yeah. Yeah. Because he burns his energy.
Is he all backed up with
poop?
Yeah.
This is just all.
No. This is the story right now that he was in a vegetative state.
He's gonna rise 3 days later.
I am your great.
Yeah, I've heard that story before.
Yeah.
Today's Quad is brought to you by MAPS Anabolic. If you're looking to maximize your overall muscle and strength, MAPS Anabolic is the perfect place to start. With a full 30-day money-back guarantee, there is absolutely zero risk. So what are you waiting for? Go to mindpumpmedia.com and get started today.
It's the motherfucking Quad.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-qua.
First question is from Jay Rosen 10. What are the best exercises for training obliques?
Oh, for some reason, the obliques, it fell out of favor to train. Actually, I know what the reason is.
You love to talk about this one.
Yeah, idiots in the
physique
and bodybuilding world talking about how training your obliques will make you get this huge waist and whatever. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Now, maybe them, because they're so massively muscled and they're on tons and tons of gear. Maybe that makes sense for them, but for the average person, there's no truth to this whatsoever. If you look at ancient sculptures from the Greeks or the Romans, and remember, back in those days, they didn't have bodybuilders to sculpt. They based their sculptures off of their gladiators and their athletes and what they saw to be high-performing athletes. And what you'll notice in all of them is all of them have well-developed obliques. Obliques are some of the most important performance muscles that you can have and important stabilizer muscles that you can have. As an athlete, your obliques are what give you a lot of the power to throw punches and balls and kick and run and twist and all that stuff. So very, very important muscles to train.
I'm always skeptical of somebody I see like that's really shredded and cut and doesn't have pronounced obliques. I'm like, you're not that strong.
Yes.
I guarantee it.
Yes. Well, it's first of all, it's probably one of the more underrated muscles, right?
Totally.
On your body. And to your point too, it's if you are somebody who can deadlift or squat a lot of weight, it's a stabilizer.
Yeah, you have to.
So those ones will naturally get developed if you do a good job of doing that. So to your point, Justin, like, yeah, it's an obvious sign that someone isn't that strong if they have really weak obliques, even if the rest of their body looks really developed.
My favorite exercises for obliques, now I have favorites that are more of like a sculpting, developing exercise, and then I have favorites that are more of a performance exercise. Now, I didn't play basketball and football and baseball, but I did do judo, jiu-jitsu, and wrestling, and I did train my obliques from an athletic standpoint as well. So let's start with the sculpting exercise. I like cable chops. Cable chops coming from the top, the Those side, from the bottom. When I'm doing them from a sculpting standpoint, it's controlled. My bottom part of my body is stabilized, and I'm developing my obliques, you know, similar way that I would develop my biceps. I'm doing reps, controlling the repetition, trying to feel the obliques stretch and squeeze. Now, from a performance standpoint, I'm doing those exercises explosively and I'm pivoting off my feet.
Yeah.
Now I'm chopping quickly, or better yet, I used to like to do this with bands. Bands was my favorite way to do these explosive type chops.
See, I love to do that with med balls against the wall. Yeah, thrown against the wall. There's just so many explosive power type movements you can do like that that have so much carryover and translate so well to athletic pursuits. I also really like what was that one called? It's the one where you have like
a counter rotation exercise.
Not just that, not just anti rotation, but also like
Russian twist,
the landmine.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
I was just throwing them out there.
Yeah. One of them will stick. The landmine rotations too, because then as I'm keeping it in tight, I can really emphasize my obliques to stabilize that weight on the eccentric part.
Definitely.
So I cable chops for me, because you can use cable chops either as like a heavy, slow grinding strength training tool, or you can use it explosive, kind of similar you're saying, like with the med ball. So wood chops is what we call it, or cable chops, I think are the best. I mean, that's my favorite for developing them specifically, but just incorporating rotational and anti-rotational movements. So I mean, even you can take something like a dumbbell row, right? A single arm dumbbell row, and you can throw, especially because if you're pretty strong, you can row a pretty good amount of weight on that. And if you actually throw some rotation in there, you'll probably be able to row even more. So I love doing that as like a rotational movement, and you get obliques involved in that a lot.
Of course, too, for isometric, farmer carries, will basically if you do that for the suitcase carry, so you just do one side and you really isolate and focus on really like keeping your body in good posture as you're walking with that kind of weight. It really, you know, has a good effect.
Well, I'll tell you, when I did because I followed the MAP Strong program, and there were farmer carries, heavy farmer carries in there, and that was the first time I'd ever done them consistently in a workout. And I could not believe the muscle that I put on my back, my forearms, and my core. My core got so strong from doing not even doing a suitcase carry, just a both hands. I'm in a trap bar and I'm doing heavy walk while I'm bracing my core.
Well, think about that too, how your arms have a propensity to just slightly move. And so all these little tiny movements, you have to be able to stabilize and have that anti-rotational effect. So if I'm moving forward, I don't want my arms to swing. I want to keep my core in place. I want to be able to brace properly. So your obliques are fired up like crazy.
Next question is from Marissa Lane. How do I fix duck feet? I not only have external rotation when I squat, but while I am walking as well. Is mobility work enough to get to the point where I'm walking naturally with my feet straight?
Yes, mobility work can make
Can we also fix duck lips?
Yeah, that's a big problem.
I'm pro duck lips.
So, thanks, Adam. So obviously, like it sounds, someone's feet turn out. Now, I've worked with a few people where this is a big problem. All of them were dancers. All of them had a background in ballet or dance, which actually emphasizes that external rotation. The other people that I've worked with that have this type of a problem didn't have it as severely, but it came from having collapsed arches, flat feet, just poor ankle mobility. So if your ankle doesn't have good mobility, your feet will naturally want to turn out to make up for this problem. So this is typically an issue that either starts at the hip where your hip doesn't internally rotate very strongly, or more often than not, unless you're that dancer, it comes from weak feet and ankle mobility. If your feet are weak and they don't have the strength, because if you look at, if you were to Google right now foot anatomy or foot muscular anatomy, you would be very surprised to see that there are lots and lots of muscles in the foot. The foot is not just a rigid extension of your leg that you just like a, it's not like you're standing on a stilt or something like that. Yeah. It is it's supposed to be very active. And if those muscles aren't doing what they're supposed to do, it's going to throw you off.
And a good way to look at this is like the wear and tear and see where you're really callusing and where you're putting most of your weight, you know, on your feet. And that's one thing that I know like Dr. Brink helped to kind of highlight that triangle of pressure that you really want to see if you can maintain and train your body to stabilize in that direction a little bit more. And that's you know, typically where your the tongue of your shoe and then your big toe and then your pinky toe and kind of dispersing that force between all three of those points.
So this is exactly, I'll tell you what I would do with a client. Every time before we work out, this is what it would look like. I would do 90-90 work for the hips. I would do combat stretch for the ankles. Then I would take you barefoot, squeeze a basketball, and really concentrate on your feet the way they're planted on the floor, like Justin's saying, that triangle, and squeezing the basketball and doing as deep of squats as you can, holding it, squeezing the basketball between your knees while you work on just the mechanics. Between that priming, so if you do those two for the priming movements, and then go in and you do that for your strength training is work on that. That is what I would have my client do that all the time until we start to work.
That's a great combination. So in short foot is another exercise. If you're having trouble activating your feet, there's a movement called short foot. And essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to squeeze the muscles in your arch. It's almost like you're trying to create a stronger arch in your foot. That'll help you connect to that position. Then when you do that last exercise Adam talked about where you have the basketball between your legs, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to activate your feet, then do your squats. That's a great combination.
Next question is from May Punk. Why would my weight go up a couple of pounds after I started fitting into my clothes differently? I clearly look like I'm losing weight, but the scale is not reflecting that. I've been doing MAPS anywhere.
This is a beautiful place.
Yeah, what a great problem.
You're winning.
This is exactly what you want. Your weight, remember, your weight represents just your whole body. What's on your body, how much it weighs. So to be more specific, if I cut your leg off, right, you're going to lose, I don't know, 20 pounds. Are you happy that you lost 20 pounds because you lost your leg? Of course not. What you're experiencing is more muscle on your body and some fat loss. Now, why does this look like you're losing weight? Because body fat is more voluminous per pound. So to give you an extreme example, right now, imagine a pound of iron. Imagine what that would look like. A pound of iron would look like a small ball, right? Now think of a pound of cardboard. It's a lot bigger. It takes up more space because the cardboard isn't as dense. Now, fat and muscle aren't that extreme in terms of their difference, but it's enough to make a big difference to where if you gained 4 pounds of muscle and lost, you know, 2 pounds or 3 pounds of body fat, the scale is going to show that you're heavier, but your body is going to look leaner. And you're going to feel differently when you put your clothes on.
I'll give you exactly what we used to have in the gym. So if you want a good visual, if 5 pounds of muscle looks like a softball and 5 pounds of fat looks like one of those fire logs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the difference. So if that's what they should. So that's a massive difference. So as you lose that body fat, it's going to condense the inches, right? So your waistline will go down, but the scale may stay the same. And honestly, this is where I want to be with every client. My goal whenever I, no matter what their goal is, body fat reduction, muscle building, just being healthy, I am looking for them to start to see like their waistline tighten up, they get stronger in the gym, but our scale staying right about the same. Mm-hmm. Because I know that we're having a nice exchange. We're losing about 2 or 3 pounds of body fat and we're gaining about two or three pounds of muscle. Scale is saying the same, but they are seeing a difference in the mirror. They're seeing a difference on inches on their waist. That means you have a very nice balance of your training and nutrition regimen. It means you're right on pace.
In MAPS Anywhere, even though it's a program where you're not using barbells, dumbbells, and machines because it was designed for at-home use or, you know, to work out anywhere, is still a very effective muscle builder. If you follow MAPS anywhere, you are going to build some muscle, which then speeds up your metabolism. So if you stay on this path, if you have a lot of body fat to lose and this is blowing you away, why do I look leaner? I'm gaining weight on the scale. I still have 30 pounds to lose. Stay on track. Stay on track. You're going to start to lose body fat in a hurry, especially now that you've built some muscle and your metabolism's faster. You know, when I was back in the day, I used to, this was a way that I would sell resistance training to clients, especially early days of personal training, because back in those days, women in particular were very apprehensive to lift weights. So I had this female trainer that worked for me. Her name was Homera, and she was built. She was lean. She was very toned and sculpted, you know, nice legs, glutes, delts, arms. Most women who came into the gym would point her out and say, wow, that's what I want to look like. So what I would do when I would talk to women about lifting weights is I would page this trainer to my desk. Then I'd have Homera walk up to the potential client and I'd say, okay, I want you to guess how much.
I used to do the same thing.
How much she weighs.
I'd say, I want you to guess how much she weighs. Yeah. And every single time they would say, oh, like 105, 110. And I'd say, okay, Homer, how much do you weigh? 140 pounds. And they would be blown away to the point where we'd have to walk over a scale and weigh them. And then I'd say, see, she's muscle and she's lean and that's how you want to look. So let's not worry so much about the scale. Let's put some muscle on your body. It'll let you eat more food. So now you can stay leaner easier. You're stronger and more mobile. And oh, by the way, you'll look better anyway.
Next question is from Jessica Arkebeck. How much NEAT is too much? Can you overdo it? Does your body get too efficient with a certain daily step count like it would with long distance endurance cardio?
It's too much when it becomes NEATO.
I think we need to clear some things up because we started talking about NEAT more than anybody I know in the space a long time ago, and there's a little bit of blurriness here, right? NEAT is technically non-exercise, so it's things that you just would naturally do. Actively walking would actually technically fall under the movement or cardio. It wouldn't necessarily fall under NEAT. So, you know, can you do too much NEAT? No, like you can't do things that are naturally creating movement and calorie burn throughout your day because it's such a low level of intensity. It's not exercise. So you can't do too much NEAT. I guess you could technically do too much walking. I mean, if you were walking so much that you're burning so many calories and you're under consuming, you're going to send a signal to the body to become efficient with those calories and potentially slow the metabolism down. Yeah. So it really depends on how you're fueling your body.
It depends on your goals, who you are. You know, if you're moving too much, is it hurting your joints? Is your goal maximum muscle gain? That's a different answer than if your goal is just overall health, which is different than if you want lots of endurance. Like, it really does depend on the individual. Plus, I do want to make this point here. There is a certain amount of cardio or NEAT or whatever you want to call it that will actually help your body also build muscle. Because I don't want people to think the opposite. What I don't want is people to think, oh, my goal is to build as much muscle as possible. Therefore, I'm going to avoid all cardio and all activity. That will also reduce muscle building because some form of cardiovascular activity or amount of cardiovascular activity is going to improve your health, which will then improve your body's ability to build muscle. Like for me, for example, who, you know, your classic, you know, ectomorph, or, you know, when I was growing up, it was hard for me to build muscle. You know, I used to be afraid of any cardio. Like, don't do any cardio. All I'm going to do is lift weights. That was actually a mistake. I had to do some to maintain my health, to have good health, which would then help my body build muscle. And I've noticed now that if I just lift weights, I don't build as much muscle than if I lift weights and incorporate some form of cardiovascular activity, whether it's walking or hiking. But what's too much? I mean, it all depends on the person, the goal, you know, what you're looking to do with your body. If your goal is to have lots of endurance, you're going to do way more of this stuff than if your goal is to build maximal muscle. And if you want great health, it's probably best to do some form of walking or cardiovascular activity every single day.
Yeah, I think, I mean, If I'm getting too much activity per day, you're going to know that. Like if I have a really rigorous job, if I'm constantly on my feet, I would definitely make sure that my nutrition is supplementing that. And so I'm getting adequate nutrition to kind of, you know, help along that process. Cause that's one of those things. It's daily activity is going to be a constant that your body's going to end up adapting to anyway. So that's something that's like, you got to kind of, you know, take that into consideration along with your training program as well.
I've never had a client ever do too much walking. So you could pretty much, as long as you're being fed, you know, and getting adequate macronutrients, you're hitting your basic macronutrient targets. 99.9%
Most people don't walk enough.
Right. I'm advising more walks, take more walks, especially at a time right now with COVID and most people being in mm-hmm. shelter in place. So, it will be really tough, to overdo, something like this.
Yeah. For me personally, and I like resistance training. It's my favorite form of exercise. In other words, you know, my goals, they change, but what do I like the most? Right. I like to be strong. I like to feel like I have some muscle on my body. And I have found for me that the ideal amount of steps every single day to accomplish that is anywhere between 12 to 14,000 a day. Most people don't even get a half of that, right? And that's for me who always likes to be strong and muscular. If my goal was endurance or stamina, it would be a lot more than that. So just to give you a little bit of a reference, you know, in terms of my personal goals. And with that, go to mindpumpfree.com and download all of our guides, resources, and books. You can also find the three of us on Instagram. You can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin. You can find Adam at Mind Pump Adam. And you can find me at Mind Pump Sal.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.